Order, order.
In the House this week, problems with communications, raised right at the start with this complaint from Labor's chief whip, Chris Hipkins.
Mr Speaker, I want to raise with you a very serious matter with regard to members of Parliament being able to conduct their business, and it does relate to the order of the House. It's come to my attention in the last 24 hours that the Parliamentary Service are using an email security facility that monitors and in some cases monitors the content of and in some cases blocks emails to and from members of Parliament on the basis of government security classification. I had an email exchange last night with a journalist, a member of the press gallery, that was blocked and I was not able to send it because the document that I was attaching, that I had obtained under the Official Information Act, had previously had a government security classification.
Mr Hipkins said it didn't matter how he came to have the document.
The fact that the Parliamentary Service are monitoring the emails coming to and from members of Parliament's email addresses is completely unacceptable. It is clearly a breach of privilege, and I ask that you investigate that matter with some urgency and ensure that that situation is immediately dealt with.
Mr Hipkins was supported by his Labour colleague, David Parker, who was experiencing some deja vu.
This was actually very similar to the issue that was considered by the Privileges Committee in respect of the Andrea Vance and complaint by others, where it was very clearly found by the Privileges Committee that information belonging to members is actually the members' information. It doesn't belong to parliamentary services, it doesn't belong to the government, and it is for members to do what they think they should, pursuant to our rights of freedom of expression that are guaranteed in this House.
The Speaker, David Carter, promised the two Labour MPs that he'd look into it and report back the next day, which he did, starting by explaining that Parliament used an encrypted email system called C-Mail, with C as in look but not an ocean, that encrypts email traffic between state sector organisations.
C-Mail also prevents classified information being inadvertently sent outside of participating organisations. C-Mail has been in use in Parliament since 2007. Mail filters look for the words C-Mail, restricted, sensitive, or in confidence, which are attached to emails and documents at the choice of the sender. It then applies encryption to the email and attachments before sending them. It does not otherwise scan or store the content of emails. I have been given an absolute assurance that the Parliamentary Service email system does not scan emails, members' emails, other than for spam filtering, viruses and C-mail classifications.
Despite that assurance and some advice on a workaround method of getting over the blocks imposed by C-Mail, Labour MPs peppered the Speaker with questions, including this one from Claire Curran.
Is Parliament able to receive a list of the trigger words that sparks this blocking of documents?
Technical help on that one came from the Attorney-General, Chris Finlayson.
The Speaker's given a very clear ruling. This is a major issue. The system's been in place since 2007. The Speaker's indicated, well, you've indicated, sir, that you're prepared to look at it urgently. It could possibly even go to the Privileges Committee on an urgent basis. We can't be dealing on an episodic basis with a whole lot of technological questions.
Order, order. I think... the Attorney-General.
An acting IT guy in the chamber. And that wasn't the only communications glitch left unresolved. Thursday's questions for oral answer by ministers included this one for the Minister for Social Development, Anne Tolley, from Green Party co-leader Materia Touré.
Tēnā koe, Mr Speaker. Tēnā koe, Mr Speaker. Yes. My question is to the Minister for Social Development and asks, ka whakaia ia, ki tā te kawinete o te kotahitanga o ngā whenua o te ao, mō ngā teka tamaiti,
on the rights of the
e tono rā kia whakatūturu tana kawenatanga, me noho tōna roa rawa atu,
to
ngā pāngapai o te tamaiti e roto i te hininaro, ka whakamanahia ana ngā ture e pāna ki ngā tamariki.
As well as being able to hear the live translation through their headsets, members in the chamber had it printed on their question sheets, where Materia's question to the Minister for Social Development was translated as, does she accept that the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child requires her government to ensure the best interests of the child shall be a paramount consideration in the enactment of laws relating to children? And that question was answered for Anne Tolley by one of her cabinet colleagues.
Oh, the Honourable Hekia Parato.
Tēnā koe, Mr. Speaker.
Tēnā koe.
Ko te whakautu tuatahi ki te mema nāna i pātai mai, kao. Engari, mō te whai haere i tōna pātai, te āhua nei e kōrero ana kē aia mō tētahi atu kaupapa.
Mrs. Parato then elaborated on her answer in English.
I accept that Article 3 of the Convention states that, quote, in all actions concerning children, whether undertaken by public or private social welfare institutions, courts of law, administrative authorities or legislative bodies, the best interest of the child shall be a primary consideration, close quote. The member, however, appears to be referring to Principle 2 of the Declaration of the Rights of the Child, which dates back to 1959 and was the basis of the convention adopted by the United Nations in 1989 and was signed up to by New Zealand in 1993. Minister Tolley is currently leading a delegation to Geneva to discuss New Zealand's report under the United Nations Convention.
Mrs. Parata was then interrupted by a complaint from Maturia Touré.
My question was actually quite simple, is whether she accepts the convention. She doesn't. The issue of Minister Tolley travelling wherever she is of no relevance to the question that was on notice.
The Speaker didn't agree.
I am the sole determinant as to when the answer has gone on for too long, or if I think it's moving into areas that are unnecessary to be an answer to the question.
In any case, Hekia Parata said she'd already answered the question.
I answered the first part of her question in Māori, since she had asked it in Māori. So I gave a very definitive answer to the first part, and I went on to elaborate in answer to the second part of her question.
Mrs. Parata later demonstrated her linguistic skills in answer to another question to her as Education Minister about the teaching of Asian languages.
Learning a language helps to build closer relationships with other cultures and countries, and currently there are now 203 schools from Southland to Taitokerau receiving support for Mandarin, Japanese or Korean language programs. Kamsam nida. Yeah,
language difficulties aside, this communication glitch arose when both parties were speaking English.
Point of order.
Point of order.
So just to clarify your ruling, are you saying that what I heard from the Minister was not what he said?
We'll come back to how that miscommunication between Winston Peters and the Speaker developed. Meantime, though, over to Rhys Lyon and life, death and sex in the committee rooms.
A petition signed by more than 2,000 people calling on the government to reverse the convictions of people convicted of consensual homosexual acts prior to the passing of the Homosexual Law Reform Act 1986, as well as calling for an official apology for those convictions, was the subject of a submission to the Justice and Electoral Committee on Thursday. Committee members heard from Ted Greensmith-West, who noted the timeliness of the petition coming before Parliament this year.
This year we remember 30 years since the Homosexual Law Reform Bill was passed in this Parliament.
Mr. Greensmith-West said the law had ruined the lives of convicted homosexuals.
Because they were persecuted for who they were and for fulfilling their sexual desires and their sexuality as they saw fit. It was hate. It is no different than the hate I experienced as a young boy in the changing rooms at school, being spat at, being called a faggot, being bullied, being abused. Except this hate was endorsed by the government.
Mr. Greensmith-West called on the police as well as the government to apologise to those people convicted under the law.
We're talking about the men who had to hide who they were from everyone that they knew. The men who pretended to be flatmates with two separate beds in the house. We're talking about our brothers, our uncles, our husbands in many cases, our cousins, our friends and our family. It is these people that we owe an apology to, that can't even begin to smooth over the wrongs of the past, but apologise we must.
Ted Greensmith-West speaking to the Justice and Electoral Committee. Later in the day on Thursday, the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee met in the afternoon for the presentation of a petition calling for the repatriation of the bodies of New Zealand servicemen buried in Malaysia. The committee heard from the petition's sponsor, Paul Thomas, who said he and four of his brothers had served in the army, one of whom had died on active service.
Adrian was killed in action on the 2nd of May 1956 at the age of 21. And today lies buried in Cherus Road Christian Cemetery, Kuala Lumpur. I believe that the contribution our family has had on the defence of New Zealand has earned my brother Adrian the right to a return flight back to New Zealand. Alongside all his comrades who have all paid the supreme sacrifice for this great nation, I believe it is the right thing to do, and I believe it is the honourable thing to do. Returning the remains, the souls, the spirits of all these brave men back to the bosom of the earth from which they were born.
Mr. Thomas said there were 35 New Zealand servicemen buried in Malaysia.
Not one of these servicemen are buried in a Commonwealth War Graves Cemetery. This means that they are not protected under the Commonwealth War Graves Charter that New Zealand became a signatory to way back in 1916.
Mr. Thomas told the committee that his quest to have his brother's body returned to New Zealand began in 1976 on the wishes of his mother.
The journey I have started will not end, as I have family, friends and relatives who will continue this fight until repatriation is achieved.
Paul Thomas presenting that petition to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee on Thursday. A day earlier, the Health Committee began day two of its hearing of submissions on former Labour MP Marion Street's petition calling for an investigation into public attitudes towards medically assisted dying or euthanasia. The first submission came from the Secretary of the Care Alliance, Matthew Jansen, who advocated for the benefits of palliative or end-of-life care.
Euthanasia and assisted suicide is unnecessary because palliative care works to reduce the suffering of terminal ill patients. We know that physical pain can be well controlled these days. We acknowledge suffering cannot always be totally eliminated because suffering is so complex, but palliative care is effective.
Matthew Jansen said legalised assisted dying put too much power in the hands of doctors and pointed to an overseas example.
Have a look at Holland and their experience. And what you find is that doctors are making more and more choices about end of life because they have been given this very, very big power and they have used it. And so that has given them a license to start thinking about this person in front of me, their quality of life isn't very good. I will move them through into euthanasia.
Care Alliance Secretary Matthew Jansen. And representing doctors in a later submission to the committee was New Zealand Medical Association Chairman Dr. Stephen Child.
We believe wholeheartedly in patients to ask for treatment to be withheld. We believe in the right to good access to palliative care and palliative care services. And we believe in the right of the administration of analgesia and sedation, in other words, pain relief and other medications, for the purpose of relieving pain and suffering, even if the secondary consequence of that treatment may hasten death.
Dr. Child drew a distinction between that and euthanasia.
And in summary, therefore, the New Zealand Medical Association, in balancing all of these issues, in principle and practice, does not support a change in the legislation.
New Zealand Medical Association Chairman Dr. Stephen Child speaking to the Health Committee, which will continue hearing submissions on that petition next week. In total, there were 16 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Back in the debating chamber, the door on the opposition side worked like a cat flap this week. New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters going through it twice after getting into chest-ups with the Speaker.
Speaker, I don't wish to waste this Parliament's time by apologising for you on that matter. It was crap and it is crap. Then the member will leave the chamber.
That was Tuesday, then Wednesday, when Mr. Peters stood up while the Speaker was already on his feet.
I just want to be absolutely clear. I've given the member a warning that I'm not prepared to tolerate him continuing to raise a point of order that's challenging a ruling I've just given. But if I order, if I detect for... The member will leave the chamber. The member will leave the chamber.
Which will be back in business again from 2 p.m. on Tuesday when Mr. Peters, David Carter and their fellow MPs begin the last week of this three-week sitting period, previewed in Thursday's business statement by the Attorney-General Chris Finlayson, standing in for Gerry Brownlee as Leader of the House.
The acting Leader of the House.
Mr. Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday, 20 September,
the government will look to complete the first reading of the statute's repeal bill, the third reading of the evidence amendment bill, and to progress a number of other bills on the order paper. Wednesday will be a members' day.
Chris Finlayson, acting leader of the House, and as we heard at the beginning of the program, Parliament's IT guy. I'm Tom Fruin, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.